Well, I'm so honored, truly, and so happy to have this time with you. Mati Vargas Gibson, our new member of the ICMTA Board of Directors, thank you so much for taking the time to have a conversation with me.
You are so welcome.
I'm Melissa Michaels, and Mati has just stepped on to been elected onto the Board of Directors of the International Conscious Movement Teachers Association. And that is a blessing. That is good news for the future of this organization. So Mati, you and I have had a chance to just already start the conversation, but I'd love to go back to right where we were, which is, tell us where you come from. And we know that you're living in Texas, which is way too hot right now, but that your roots are deep and they come from the country that we know as Mexico. And I'd love to hear just a little bit about your family and where you come from.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for asking me to come and join you here today. It's fun to talk about these things, right? So yes, I grew up in Mexico City and my parents were involved. Well, my dad was involved in tourism. So we traveled a lot. He worked for the airlines and my mom was a geographer. Professor. So big family, lots of music, lots of art. So that was kind of my time growing up in Mexico City, surrounded by a lot of interesting experiences and people. And then eventually my dad got sent to work to the US to work for the Mexican Tourism Office. So we got sent to work to the US in 78, I was 15. So it was a very strange time to leave home. Home country, home ground, and arrived to the U.S. as a teenager, even though I had been to the U.S. before and I spoke English because I grew up learning English in school, fully bilingual school. It was very strange here. Like I had an idea of what the U.S. was and it was very different. There was, they were not used to people coming in from Mexico who were not undocumented immigrants, fleeing or coming as an economic necessity. And so coming in with a fully bilingual way of being and knowing about the country, it's like people would ask me if we had cars in Mexico or electricity. So that was a bit of a shock. And it was Dallas. So I've been here. I worked for the Mexican consulate myself in my 20s after I lived in England for a year. And then, so I went back to Mexico, even though I lived in Dallas, for another 10 years and worked a lot with immigrant communities and the cultural office and the press office. And then I turned 27 and hit an identity wall in a way, right? That first time of what am I doing? And started making art, started blowing glass and moved to Southern Illinois to blow glass and go into a school program. I had studied history. So I have a master's in history from Boston in Texas. And then I just completely shifted my flow. And it was the first time I think that I made my own decision about where to go based on total gut feeling and the flow just going, no, you're not moving to London. You're going to Southern Illinois to a really small rural town to make art and connect with the land. And it was right at the end of that process. I met my Scottish husband in grad school there. Long story about how he ended up in Southern Illinois. And we stayed 12 years because he ended up teaching there. And I found the dance, the five rhythms, after I finished my degree. And I guess the wave video and the book came into my inbox, in my mailbox at the time. And so I started dancing there and in St. Louis and Chicago. So danced with Gabrielle in Chicago many times, very roundabout.
Well, really exciting. And I can see how your destiny is weaving all these threads together at this point in your life in a really powerful way. Before we go into more content, I want to just say, I'm hearing this click on my screen a lot. And I don't know if it's maybe a piece of jewelry or something.
Maybe yeah, it's my earring. Is that it?
I think that is.
I'll just keep one like a pirate.
Okay, good. Thank you so much. Great. All right. Deep breath.
Okay.
At 27, something in your soul stirred and you said, I got to follow me. I got to follow that current. Something's really moving me. And it guided you to the artist in you. Mm-hmm. And that you were playing in a very tactile way as an artist. And that led you to being open. Mm-hmm. And at that point, then Gabrielle's brilliance came streaming through your life. And it sounds like the bus came by and you got on. And you did some deep studies with Gabrielle. What year was it that you met Gabrielle?
I started dancing the rhythms in 98. So it must have been the year after.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, yeah. You really were right late 90s.
You were right there in your Saturn return. That critical adulting moment. Awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. And I had danced as a kid. You know, I actually had stopped dancing when I first moved to the States.
Mm-hmm.
That stopped for me and just didn't quite click anymore. So it was a big return, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when you were dancing as a child, what kind of dance was that, Mati?
Oh, everything from ballet to Mexican folklorico, flamenco. I danced all the time.
Awesome. And
my grandfather was very involved with the folkloric music movement in Mexico. They traveled through the country in the 50s. Documenting music and costume and traditional dress and sort of arranging it for performance. So there was always a rehearsal going on that I just popped into.
So you had that cultural awakening and remembrance through the dance.
Yes,
and
that too.
Once that's in you, it's never gone. You, of course, had it in all around you, but you also got to really live it. Mm-hmm. And then come here to the States and lose it, only to find it in this contemporary, very overtly Western way, but that of course is so, has the potential to open doors to all kinds of cultural mm-hmm. remembrance. And I'd love to hear you talk about like what happened, what the rhythms were for you. Was it a big healing time? Was it just a renaissance into your own creativity or all of the above?
Probably all a combination. I mean, the dance, in terms of just the pure coming into the body, it was a time of reclamation for me, mm-hmm. Therapeutically, when I moved to make art and worked with some, you know, family of origin stuff. So I had been kind of out of my body for a long time, or very petty, you know, as a historian, academic.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big part of it. And I loved it. I just love it in a purely physical, direct way. I would say that, you know, in high school and college, I was involved in the punk movement in Texas. So it was like I like to be an edge dweller. I always feel like I'm on the edge and outside of things. And I've been lucky to find places that allow me to be on the edge and on the outside, but that still provides some kind of belonging instead of just pushing against society all the time.
Yes.
Right. Creative, non-belonging, I guess. And I found the rhythms were very much appropriate for me that way. It was a place where everything seemed really interesting. Mm-hmm. And I loved that. And the people were interesting. And I loved the international part of it. To me, it was a place where I didn't have to explain what Mexican was.
Awesome.
It was just, there were so many people from all over and so many of the Europeans or other people who were dancing at the time who were like, oh yeah, I know what that is. Mm-hmm. Compared to where I was living. So I thought that was very attractive to me.
And you found that people's knowing of what that is was very different than the stereotypical projections that you received as a child coming to the States.
Yeah, more or less, I would say so.
Well, that's my question, more or less, right? Because of course, nobody can know what it is unless there's a certain degree of lived experience.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that has had something to do with how you've come forward as a real leader in awakening the conscious dance field to the importance of understanding inclusion and equity. And we'll go there deeply in this conversation, sure. But mm-hmm. I'd love to hear anything you can share about that period of time when you started moving from being a student, which we all are always,
mm-hmm.
into knowing that you were ripe to begin to bring this medicine in your way to the people. And who were those people? And how did you really step onto the teaching part of this path?
Oh, yeah. Well, teaching five rhythms or in this path has always been such an interesting journey because I wanted to be a teacher after my first workshop with Kathy Altman in St. Louis, which was a heartbeat workshop. That was my first entry point. And I was like, she looks kind of like my mom, and has, my mom was a teacher. My whole family are mostly teachers. So it's almost like a gene. And I just wanted to do it. And then there was that process of just stands one foot in front of the other and being ready. In 2002, I almost signed up for the training, but my mother passed away. So I did not want to, I just knew it. I had actually had a dream with Gabrielle where she's like, no, just dance one foot in front of the other, literally is what she said. And I knew I wasn't ready. I wouldn't want to do the training from grieving. That was going to be, that's really where I was. So I had to let it go. I did, at the time, we didn't know when the trainings were, right? Or when the next one would be. And waited a few years, moved back to Dallas, and then everything just sort of lined up for the 2008 training. So what I want to say about that was that when I let go of the training, I really feel that's when my journey in the dance really ripened and happened.
Absolutely.
I kept dancing without, I see what you mean about the noise. I'm not sure what that is. I just kept dancing. And I'm kind of a dabbler, and I'm interested in so many things. I'm a little mercurial, and I love information and new and novelty. But five rhythms is the only thing I have not given up. I have, you know, I have two masters. I have lots of different jobs, and this one just kept moving. So dancing all those years without seeking training really cooked me.
Absolutely.
So by the time I was ready to teach, I was full. I was full of the practice, and I was embodied in a really different way. And it just made sense. So that was a really big lesson for me, and trust. Again, trusting the flow instead of what I want to do.
Yeah, and deep surrender, because you didn't know yes. when the next wave would come along to scoop you up.
Yeah, didn't know if Gabrielle would ever do another training, right? So yeah, that was amazing.
What a teaching. You are, Monty. Right there is so much information. Thank you for your integrity, which is a word that I actually feel fits closely to the culture. Yes. So you've been teaching for, 14 years now, or 13 years?
13, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what can you share about what that path has been for you? Who has called you to move with them?
You know, I was thinking of that question as we were preparing for this today, because it's been so intense to, you know, create something out of nowhere in Dallas.
Sure.
Who shows up, who to call. There's like the logistics piece of how do I interact with the world so the world knows who I am and comes to dance with me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the other piece is like who actually comes and who stays. And that's a dance that I think we're always doing as a teacher, you know, who is resonating with what I offer instead of setting out this direction of success or what that looks like or who gets it. You know, there's just so many pieces to that. I know for a long time I really wanted people to fall in love with Five Rhythms as much as I did, right? There's like this longing of, this changed my life and it's the most amazing thing, but you're only showing up once a month. You know, why don't you come every time and dive in deep and transform your life? And that's an edge, I think, because not everybody wants that level of surrender.
Or surrender in that way.
Or to surrender in that way.
Right.
So I guess it's been a path of softening, allowing, stepping into the unknown, making lots of mistakes, skills I didn't have that I could have used. I think the current awareness on trauma-informed process could have been something that, you know, if I look back, I would, you know, I could have used those skills that I feel I now have with some people who obviously were very overactivated in their movement and just didn't come back, you know, and how to follow that up. Or how is the teaching path?
Can I ask you a question about that?
Yeah. Yeah,
go ahead. I'm curious, just in a really practical way, your trauma-informed lens has matured your teaching, and I'm wondering if there's a pithy and potent practice or set of principles that guide you that help create a more integratable, safer experience for those who do come in traumatized, which at this point is almost everybody.
Everybody, absolutely everybody. I would say slowing down, right? And creating very clear beginnings and very clear endings, which I tend to do, but with just a little bit more specific awareness on the physical aspect of activation. I still very much believe in the full wave. I think it does move all the way through.
Absolutely.
My experience of activate and settle, for instance, triggers me. I actually get more activated than actually moving all the way through. So I don't think there's one thing that works for everybody or one thing that's not necessarily good for everybody. It's kind of an interesting conversation for me. So, but having, you know, the element of touch, the element of situating yourself in the room. I used to teach five rhythms in the women's prison in Dallas in the county jail. And I learned so much about activation and what to do. That was the beginning for me to really start to notice that the room was not going to settle because they were all just so not wanting to be there or in their body. And we were asking them to participate, right? So lots of eye movement things, orienting the room, touching your own body, some more breath, and just being so gentle and so less agenda about what was supposed to happen in the dance for people, right?
Absolutely.
Was a big teaching for me.
Beautiful.
What it looked like, or not. I think as a teacher, just not seeing somebody have an experience and then my version of that experience is just a really potent place to finally get to, and just letting people just be in trust that the process is happening, but also really tracking who's present and who's not, and how to work with people who seem to be leaving or coming in, sort of dissociating or being, or suddenly having angry outbursts, or, you know, not having a good time or not enjoying the dance. I think that was a big thing when you start to see people not enjoying it, but not moving through a process, was a signal of like, that person's not really even experiencing what's happening.
Well, you're speaking to a whole rich and complex terrain that really, with eyes to see, we notice on the dance floor.
Right.
And especially when you go into underserved communities or people who are literally imprisoned, either they're imprisoned in their mind, in their trauma, in a literal system that has every intention of keeping them that way. It's very, very complicated. And I appreciate hearing you just sort of pass by the many different ways that a human can disassociate, fragment, implode, explode, and not have a pathway into themselves without artful and mature guidance. And it sounds like you've really been schooled in that, and that you've experimented a lot of different ways. And I love hearing you talk about how some of your focus has been from the outside in, because we talk about trauma, but when there's shock, there's no container. And to actually start to help people come in from the outside before they can even make contact with themselves at the level of sensation or feeling,
right,
much less movement, is very wise. And actually, like, research shows the importance of that. And I love that you also understand that we must slow down. Sometimes we have to really get going and work with that, you know, sympathetic nervous system and give it a way to release, but we don't want to start there. We want to go there very intentionally. And I'm with you, the wave is a beautiful, complete process if somebody's home. And it can be helpful to help people get home. And it also can be too activating. And there's just the art of how you work with that. And thank you for having the depth and the devotion to studying that and to serving through that awareness.
Yeah, I really trust the sequence and some of the things I've been learning in the last few years when you speak about, you know, my learning edge as a teacher is really working not just with the physical body, but with the energy body. And I've been studying energy body mastery and energy body clearing with a teacher, Christina Pratt of the Last Mask Center in Portland. And she's a shamanic practitioner, but this is, it's not about shamanism, the energy body clearing. It's really calling all your energy in before you're even coming to the body and becoming very aware, you know, of where you are in just this really huge big field and energy boundaries, and really clearing the room and really grounding yourself and the room. And I noticed that when I started to really practice at that level as a teacher, becoming very aware of the energetic field, even more than what I knew what to do, really working with protection and really working with that kind of big awareness, things in the dance would change completely. So I'm very, very intrigued. That would be where like my Madonna archetype, like kind of mystical place where I would really rather live if I didn't have a body. I really feel that's a marriage of the two things right now, sort of how do you really embody energy very mindfully, because that has to do everything with sovereignty and self-responsibility. So when we speak of diversity and all the conflicts that we have around diversity, if we can start with that energy boundary, those good boundaries, that real clear awareness of your energy body, then the physical body doesn't get as triggered and as attacked. And then you can respond from a grounded place of authority, no matter what's happening. And I've seen that happen with groups, with there's people of color and lots like diversity and conflict going on. If there's an energetic awareness, it something else happens, like something magical and mysterious comes into the room that really helps things keep moving, right?
Well, it's the understanding that we're not alone.
Right.
And that really helps our ego have its right place. And I don't really want to go into anything without really recognizing that I have guides and guardians that are really here to help the work and are with us. And in traditional cultures, when there's any kind of an initiatory process or even a meaningful conversation, which can be an initiatory process, there's a bringing in, a calling in of the ancestors and really a respect to our invisible helpers, yeah. Those that are well and wise and care about true transformation and healing. And I agree with you, it's mystical, it's magical, and it's still complex. And we still need to have those really practical somatic tools, starting in our own body,
right,
and then sharing them really in a disciplined step-by-step way so that people can, you know, be held. You talked about how you open and close, the importance of that container, and also come in and stay in and work with what shows up, right, while being in that deepening with self and so on.
Yeah. And I find that the maturity is coming from learning skills to work with whatever's coming in.
Yes.
From your own place of authority. It's kind of like having a date with whatever's coming into you. You know, it's how do I, instead of reject or push away or fight with it or deny it or, you know, all the things we do to not be with, how do I let an insult or a microaggression or anything that's coming my way, actually take it in and be in relationship to it and actually hang out with it and see where I am in the relationship with it.
Beautiful, Mati. That's such a profound teaching, truly.
I think that's really where we want to, because things are not going to stop coming at us, basically. And history is not going to be erased or cleaned up, at least for another 1,000 years. As a historian, I know that process. How do we make relationship to it? Yeah.
Well, and we're allowed to have preference, but we're not allowed to really ultimately have attachment or try and control it, because then we miss, then we're not in school. And we both know that in order to be a teacher, we are every day on the front lines of our own becoming. And that's real. Yeah. Well, speaking of that, there's the each of us individually, and then there's the whole collective. And as a historian, you understand that we're just making micro shifts, but we have a mandate to get going and to take that very seriously with every utterance and every opportunity that shows up before us and how we create spaces. And I'd love to hear you talk about the call to action that you have inside of yourself to be a leader in helping to shift the conscious dance field's awareness and practice when it comes to equity and inclusion at this time.
Right. That is such a big question.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of different levels of that question for me as to where my effort goes. Okay. So I haven't sought out to create sort of racially diverse dance floors for me, for myself. That's just not happened. But my dance floor has been traditionally in Dallas, especially very international. It's the place where people who either just moved to Dallas or it's more like a displacement immigrant, you know, it's my story. So I think that's where, that's what that's happened. So I tend to have a lot of sort of first generation foreigners, which is a very different experience that a second, third generation person of color. That happens as well. So I've been trying to figure out how do I fit into the conversation around diversity and inclusion. That's one way it shows up. In my work as a translator and interpreter, I'm much, much more involved in those spaces and how to address disparity, mostly by being a witness or helping personally. And when the conversation on race really, really rose to the surface and got put in the center last year, let me back up. I've always had conversations with people of color, teachers of color, that has been in the back of my mind all along for 20 years. It's like, come on, we're really in mostly white spaces.
Yeah.
White affluent spaces. And, but it wasn't until last year that the call to action just really showed up as to how are we going to really shift that, because it's not going to be sustainable. And it's just not fair, you know, that how is the dance just, you know, available to people who can travel and spend all the money to travel and have 10 days off at a time to dance, or months at a time to just dance and work on themselves. So that paradigm of just working on myself is just not landing for me. So a few colleagues, teachers in the Five Rhythms field and new teachers in training, for some reason, we just all ended up in a conversation about this and going, well, let's step in to do something, and created just a salon. I had been starting some teacher salons because I'm alone in Dallas. I always feel a little unplugged for the rest of the collective. And it's like, let's meet on Zoom and talk, you know, just have coffee. But then COVID happened, and we had one about that. And then the next one was George Floyd and let's talk about race. But we created a group to envision. We don't know what it's going to be yet because it's the new conversation. So that's why the group's called Envisioning, you know, Five Rhythms as a Path to Liberation. And we're at least having the conversation of what is it like to really tackle the issues of race, diversity, access, anti-Blackness, anti-racism in a community that's also worldwide. Because Black racial politics and dynamics in the US are not the same as in other countries. However, anti-Blackness happens everywhere. And right now, I don't think I have any answers specifically. We're just working on having the conversation, creating spaces for the conversation amongst teachers, and starting to create awareness both at a really practical level. Like, what do you do? How do you feel when you have that happen in the dance floor? Microaggressions, do you notice? Very basic languaging around it, and then moving towards like, what about trainings? What about what does it really mean to have a diverse classroom, a diverse community of dancers locally and internationally? Because I do believe those are two very different things. You have to look at your own place first and then at the bigger world. I'm always kind of in between the two, I think. So what does it look like? I think it's just, we're in flowing. You know, we were really clear when we started that group that we would follow the pattern of the wave to inform the work, to not just jump into knowing what we're doing until we really got grounded with it all. So that's where it is.
Well, I look forward to returning to a conversation with you all, because as you know, that's really been where my entire focus has been. And I'm curious if people want to have the opportunity to be in that conversation with you and your colleagues, our colleagues, Mati, how would that happen?
Right now, there's several ways to sort of join in. And as you know, at the beginning, when you start things, there's a lot of noise and excitement, and then you have to sort of keep feeding the fire. So we at least have a Facebook group where there's postings, there's conversation about that. If people want to present an issue and talk about it, there's some really good agreements in place about what gets centered, whose experience gets to be spoken of, and who gets to speak for whom, which is a big part of working with Absolutely. Diversity, right? Like I can't speak for a Black teacher, but I can invite that Black teacher to really have space to be heard and witnessed. We have talked about creating smaller groups that would dive into learning, because a lot of what has arisen in this conversation is how do white people address their own whiteness, like that really connecting with your own bias and the things that you do or not do around people of color and your relationship to that. And that's an interesting conversation that requires a lot of tact and a lot of prudence to unwind, right? Because once you really, so that doesn't backfire and it becomes creative. And we are, and we have some other plans in the works for in person.
Great.
To actually create an in-person container, one that's able to happen, because it has to happen in the body, and then we want to be able to put it in the dance and actually create an experiment. You know, create experiments with each other as teachers before we can take it out into communities. Like if we don't do the work ourselves first, you can read all about it and then get to a community and try to integrate diversity and have it all just basically explode. So it's in process.
So it sounds like there's a Facebook group. Mm-hmm. What's that Facebook group called?
It is called Envisioning Five Rhythms as a Path to Liberation. And it's very much Five Rhythms teachers right now. Maybe the IICMTA might consider doing something like that for all the other movement practices, which would be really interesting. If you connect with me, I'm happy to include you. I think we invited most teachers, so.
Great. And for those folks who are listening who are not Five Rhythms, there are so many resources. Mm-hmm. ICMTA has a commitment to continuing to learn together, and how fabulous are the Five Rhythms at the root with your leadership, Mati, and others, is really actually going into the next level of conversation. Certainly within Golden Bridge, we are living and breathing this and have been for a long time. And I know some of the other schools are really getting in there too.
Yes.
And I think this piece around deconstructing our whiteness and understanding our collective history is critical, mm-hmm. so that we can come with a great deal of humility and understand the importance of actually stepping back and letting others step forward, along with really starting to become responsible for the impacts of our leadership, both the ones that are truly blessing and in alliance with the diverse needs around us, and the ones that really continue to perpetuate the kinds of woundings that have created this incredibly unstable situation between people of different walks and ways on this planet. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad we're doing it. It'll be really interesting to see how these streams come together. But in our training, nobody does just somatics without the social justice. They just, you know, if you have a body, they go together. Yeah. And I'm glad we finally have come to that. And just to say that the dance actually Gabrielle did an amazing job of bringing a contemporary universal map through. Obviously it exists, and mm-hmm. she had the capacity to see it. And of course, there's so much that has been brought forth from so many different cultures where the dance lived long before we all showed up doing these beautiful rhythms overtly. And there's something about just recognizing that that I think is even really important.
I would agree. Yes, I don't. A personal investigation for me right now is in the sort of like, who am I to even pretend to know what you need towards anybody who would choose to be a student of mine, especially in regards to, you know, the spiritual life and the a path to follow, or a certain, you know, set of precepts that are supposed to really bring you happiness, or whatever that is that I'm offering, right? And recently, I've studied a lot with Arnold Mindell, who created process work. And yep. One of the most fundamental teachings I've received from him is the idea of rank and power, right? Rank, privilege, and power. And recently, I've really started walking around with, like, can I just take the rank out of any conversation I'm in? Like, becoming really aware. Like, right now, I'm aware that you have rank over me because you've been a teacher longer, right? Mm-hmm. Or that would be a perceived rank. You've been a teacher longer. You have a wonderful big organization. You kind of run your world in a very different way. And yet I want to meet you as Melissa, right? And I'm just working with that, with, you know, friendships and the people I want to dance with, you know, even the idea that they're my students doesn't feel right just now. So I think that's a way to enter into this diversity conversation too, because I could have perceived rank, I'm the teacher, but if I have an 80-year-old person on my dance floor, she has age rank over me. She has more experience and much more living, having, you know, being, and I don't even really know her story. So she might have a PhD in physics, you know, and that would be a whole other rank. So really being aware of that on the dance floor is really fascinating, because it evens everything out in a different way. Just having that awareness that there's people coming to dance with me that know a lot more than I do.
That's for sure. But I want to really acknowledge you right now, because what you just did is so gorgeous, Mati. Mm-hmm. In naming that, mm-hmm. it changes the field completely.
Yeah.
And I just want to say, I feel like I'm here interviewing you. I'm throwing in some stuff. I'm aware that I actually mm-hmm. am, because I'm so committed to us all bringing our thoughts together.
Yeah.
But I'm sitting here with, like, it's so wonderful to just see you and celebrate you and listen to you. And I'm so moved by you. Mm. And in a funny way, just because of the role I'm playing, I feel that you have higher rank than me. And I think there's something so beautiful about just naming that. And one of my great teachers, Claudia McLaren, used to call this the Rumpelstiltskin principle. When you name something, it has so much less power.
Right? Yes.
And so thank you for just saying, wait, we're two amazing souls who care a lot about this, coming from different places. We're both so vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we both have a lot of years of devotion, therefore mm-hmm. some awareness of this and that. But yeah. I just really want to acknowledge what you did. And thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah. And it's a little bit of a new practice for me recently. I don't know. It was in meditation. I mean, I know it intellectually, and I can see it in the world and in politics and in the social sphere, but to come into any conversation and just dropping the rank, I think I'm being guided to do that right now. It's kind of preparation for something that's arising in how I teach.
Gorgeous. And I just really want to say, bringing it forward changes. Everybody can join you who have the intention to grow. So yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And I just want to say, we come from a lineage mm-hmm. where sort of colonizing the world with the dance and being the first ones out and empire are not foreign to us. That's a little bit of the mm-hmm. model that generation, it wasn't on any one person, but that generation was all about. And we are in a process of being asked to do something else. And, you know, how can we shift our attention and our gaze towards the next generations and realize that you talk about yourself as an edge walker. You didn't use exactly those words, but you've talked about the edges. And the minute you started talking, I was like, oh my God, Mati is such a bridge. and you really are. Mm-hmm. And I see it on many levels between paradigms and in this body of work, even in just how you started that Facebook group. It's like there's no leaders. We're all in the conversation together. We have stuff to learn from each other. And, yeah. and that is a beautiful teaching. And that mm-hmm. leads to why you were elected to be on the board of directors of ICMTA, because the beautiful thing about that organization is there's room for individuals' gifts to shine. Mm-hmm. And there's a deep devotion to the we, to the collective.
Right.
And that's a transformation of a lineage. And mm-hmm. and it really does keep our destiny with what we came here to do, which is to help mobilize humanity in a difficult time and to really learn how to build bridges and see and hear and be with each other. And so hallelujah that fate happened and you were elected. And I'd love to hear just anything you're moved to say about stepping into ICMTA from where you sit now. Thank you.
Well, I'm really excited. I'm now really excited. I was like, when in my trajectory in the dance, you know, that moment where in five rhythms at least, and you know, the let's form a little tribe and do the tribal dance with five people and the leader and that sort of thing, that was always invariably, and I think it still happens, that would be the place where I would go, oh god, no. Or I would end up with a team that just couldn't get it together,
right?
Reluctant leaders, confusion leaders, and like, and for a long time I'd be like, okay, fine, I'll step in, you know. So that's part of my healing story of reluctant leadership, as I've been put up in front to lead many times and I didn't want to. So that's an interesting place for me to keep investigating, you know, how do I flow with a lot of people or with a group of people that are wanting to do something together, and how does that look like? And have had lots of disappointment, right, with that kind of hierarchical model of there's a boss or a leader and everybody follows, or there's a leader that doesn't really want to do it and everybody's pissed off behind it. So when, I suppose when the ICMTA got formed, I was involved in some of that birth, and then life just took me away though. It just wasn't ready. And, I'll just name it. It was like pre-menopause. It was like I had to just go away from everything. So now that things are kind of coming back around, I love that it has roots and it has legs, and it seems like it's, you know, it has worked, right? It's worked. Its intent worked on working together and with the dynamic governance, and you know, it's alive and it feels good.
Absolutely.
And now that I feel like I have legs and attention to put out into the world again, and have been stepping into these leaderships that I really believe in rotating leadership. How does that happen? It's part of my soul's calling to figure out how that happens, even though I sometimes would rather just be in my cave and read books. So it's an interesting dynamic tension for me right now to say, okay, let's try it. And can I, funny, I haven't really put it into words, but I think personally, it would be an opportunity to heal that piece. Like, can I be with a group of people where actually the power and the decisions and the actions work and greater things get accomplished, so I can learn how to do that and then put it into other things I care about. And then just see what the organization is growing into from here. So what's my piece? I think I do have things to offer. I was thinking about that today, and part of what I feel like I bring is that I operate in a lot of different worlds, not just a conscious dance world, right?
For sure.
As a translator, I I'm always looking at, you know, there's a political field, the social field, the history, the business field. And I don't feel like I'm just in that one piece of conscious dance. And that could be something that I'm bringing in, this kind of view towards the outside in some way.
Well, it keeps the work honest. It keeps the work growing. Mm-hmm. And I love that you understand that we're all coming into these spaces to do our own evolution and healing. Mm-hmm. And that was certainly my experience stepping in and moving through my time there. And I have a feeling you are going to find that you are in a circle of accountable adults who are happy to step forward and create the new pattern till everybody catches it. And then it shifts again. Mm-hmm. And that you really are amongst trustworthy colleagues. That's a beautiful thing happening there for sure. So I hope that's really nourishing to your spirit and your whole being. And I also believe that the things that stir and move through you there will help and ICMTA reach its next step of its destiny. And I just thank you, Mati. I know that, you know, it's like the future thanks you, the past thanks you, and I personally do, for just saying yes and being so devoted to being a certain kind of leader that the world really does need now, which has to do with humility and integrity and inclusivity and spaciousness, and with that, a certain kind of grace. And I think it's all summed up in that first story you told about you weren't going to grab for that teacher training. You were ready to let it go. follow the dream and let it awaken through you. And I'm so happy that I got introduced to you, and I look forward to weaving in whatever ways are true. And it's an honor to stand on the ground next to you, Mati.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. I'm very honored to be part of it. And and excited about possibility, especially as we keep just weaving. There's some healing to be done in the field of colleagues, I feel, that I have a kind of a little investment about. You know, there was pain in the separation and the splintering, and then a lot of threads got disconnected. One of the things that I know for me happened is, like, you know, for all of a sudden I was not part of alliances, but there was nothing personal between people and me, but we were suddenly in different countries, right? In the different dance countries. I'm going to put it out there because it's really coming in. It's like, I think there's got to be a room for reconciliation that we just haven't actually had a dance or a conversation. We can go into diversity and, you know, racial diversity and anti-Blackness, but even within our own communities of conscious dance, there could be some room for a conversation around reconciliation and reconnection, so that the web is actually bigger and stronger. And I'm hot all over, and I think I'm just saying that into this field right now. That could be an interesting dream for me.
Well, it's a dream that is shared by certainly myself. And I will say that there have been some very deep and risky and healing conversations with those of us that were in that first teacher training that all went in different directions because of the shadow of this whole dynamic. And we have come together in the last year to begin that very process you're talking about.
That's beautiful. Yeah.
I mean, for me, there's just been so much healing and peacemaking. Mm-hmm. Through that, and you know, I'm just one of many jillion really critical stories. So let you and I keep our ear on that one. And
yeah, absolutely. I mean, it just feels like if we can manage to do that as the dancers, as the leaders of the dance, the teachers of the dance, it's almost like it's a practice of skills that we need to have in order to create reconciliation and awareness in our dancing communities. You can't teach from an empty bag, right?
Definitely. And we have a lot of tools between us.
Absolutely. So the idea of, you know, going back to, I have to do my work, I have to dance my dance. If I don't dance, if my practice isn't full and rich and informed and, you know, bringing down the spirit of the dance every time I move, I can't teach. That's how I teach from. If I'm feeling really empty, and my husband challenges me on, like, are you a five rhythms dancer, or are you a five rhythms teacher? And if I'm just a teacher, he, like, you know, sends me back to the dance.
So, well, that's a beautiful note to complete.
I'll stop with that.
Yeah. And that's real. And that's that integrity. And, you know, may we all keep dancing and be humble.
Yes.
With one another, and find our way into more intimate, risky conversations. And I have so much gratitude and respect for who you are and how you are, Mati. And I
thank you.
I really just wish you so much wind in your sails as you chart the course of the future that I'm sure will impact many people. And not everybody will be able to come into the room and have these conversations, but the circles are widening. And I really believe that that strong, powerful seed can grow a mighty forest. And so let's keep watering it.
I agree. Yes. Thank you so much. Yeah. Look forward to the post-COVID world, right? There's so much to be done. And I love the idea that we can dance through it. So I believe in that. So.
All right, my friends.
All right, love. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I appreciate it all. And I hope we meet in person soon.
Bless you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Shalom.